I'm Christina Orlova, your host on the OCD Whisperer podcast, your trusted companion in the battle against OCD. If you're like me and understand the struggles of living with OCD, then you're in the right place. But before we dive into today's episode, I want to tell you about something incredible. Get your OCD survival kit today at www.onlineocdacademy.com. It's filled with amazing resources to aid you in all things OCD, whether you're on a tight budget or just looking to supercharge your progress. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to OCD Whisperer Show. Today with me, I have Alexandra. She is currently an IOCDF advocate, clinical mental health graduate student, and freelancer within the OCD community. Having lived with OCD since the age of 6, she knows just how debilitating the disorder can be and is dedicated to both raising awareness about OCD and offering compassionate, intersectional, and accessible evidence-based support to her peers. A first-generation Latinx, Alexandra is especially passionate about decreasing stigma and increasing education in marginalized populations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I actually reached out and wanted to talk to you because I know, especially like, you know, just reading your bio, right? Like one of your kind of passions and things that I see in the community is definitely, you know, working with stigma and working with, you know, marginalized populations. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I definitely want to cover on the show and talk about is talking about like LGBTQ population, right? Talking about, you know, people of color and indigenous and kind of folks having OCD in those communities. Like, what are some of the things that you could tell us you see that, you know, maybe sometimes can be issues, or maybe even, you know, where people might not realize OCD or maybe can't quite access treatment in the same way? Or that's kind of a big question, but yeah, anything you'd like to kind of start and give us a little insight?
Yeah, that's a huge ask, right? And first, let's address the elephant in the room. I got kicked out of my office, so we are bedrooming it for right now. We're undergoing some renovations in the office. But I think that one of the biggest things that I see when we're talking about any marginalized population, not just my Latinx heritage or being queer, is just the added kind of stigma that comes along with a lot of cultures, right? So when we think about being able to access treatment, ERP, or whatever it may be here in the States, a lot of folks here are able to go on kind of this linear path, right? I think I might have OCD. I'm going to Google the symptoms. Here's the symptoms. I'm going to reach out to somebody. And although maybe they don't get treatment the first time they reach out, they're able to access treatment after a while in places like Puerto Rico, where I'm from, or in other countries, or even indigenous peoples. There is so much shame and stigma around even talking about mental health that a lot of folks, maybe they get to the part of Googling it, but once they realize it's a mental illness they're looking at, they may not even feel that they can reach out for help. So I know that's something that happened to me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, the one thing that I'm thinking of, and again, it's different, but I think, frankly, the cultural component is really big. And I think it really can't be understated, right? Because in different cultures, yeah, there's just a whole different way that you operate, mindset, values, judgments, right? Community, societal expectations, et cetera. And, you know, I think you're exactly hitting it on point in terms of, I think sometimes maybe there's a forgetfulness that perhaps, and I'm going to put it out there, but I think in the States, there's more kind of discussions in ways that I think maybe people don't, or maybe we forget sometimes that like, this is not how it is in the rest of the world, man. Like people don't like, people are not actively
really
out there.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not about LGBTQ stuff really like that. Like not quite about mental health things. It's like, it's almost like certain things are more okay. Like alcoholism, I've seen in some cultures, even though it's not cool, but like, it's like globally almost more accepted than to say that you're depressed or you've got some other issue going on. And, oh no, don't do that. Don't air that laundry out there.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you said don't air that laundry, because I think that's a lot of it, right? And that's not to say that we have it easy here in the States or that things are perfect, because we know they're not. We can acknowledge that and also say that there is additional stigma in other cultures or in other countries, right? I know that, for example, in my culture, it's kind of seen as not being faithful enough as far as religion goes, or seen as a weakness to receive treatment for your mental illness or to even have a mental illness. And I had people tell me that, you know, the reason that I have mental illness is because I am possessed by a demon and that I just need an exorcism, or, you know, that I was being weak and I just needed to get over it. And I think that sometimes here, that's not understood, right? It's seen as bringing shame upon your family to have a mental illness for so many other cultures. And so it's not just not talked about, it's actively discouraged from being talked about. And so when someone reaches out in that culture to get treatment, there's this whole additional barrier of feeling that you're going against your entire family and that you may very well be ostracized from your family. And so when you talk about airing that dirty laundry, that's exactly right. You know, family members would tell me, don't tell anybody that you're struggling like this. Don't talk about it, because you're going to make our entire family look bad.
Yeah, you're actually hitting on, I think, another really big point about family and the whole family structure and dynamics. I think that that is an important piece that, again, things are different and that's fine, but just that is an important, a pretty big important difference when, you know, it's not like, it's not as individualized. It's a lot more the we and the us and kind of the cohort, the collective, as the I. And so, you know, I jokingly would say that sometimes, you know, your time alone is when you're into the restroom, and a lot of the other times it's it's everybody together. You all go to the store together. You all take walks. You have some space, but essentially the family unit really is more what's at the core, the center. Right. And so then how's this going to impact the whole unit?
Absolutely. That was my family. You're talking about my family. We did everything together. You know, from when I was very young, it was always my parents and my brother and I everywhere, restaurants together, you know, going shopping together. We were not allowed to have the doors to our rooms closed, which is super controversial in the United States, right? But in Latin America, a lot of the times that's the way it is. Children are not allowed to have that much space to themselves because it's a collectivist culture.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about then on top of all that, you know, something like OCD, or even on top of that, like LGBTQ, and I apologize now if I'm maybe missing some other, but basically when you bring now that in the room, I definitely know that like with anything LGBTQ related, cultures like that, that's already going to be extremely anxiety producing and panicky and shame and guilt, and just, it'll make your head spin 1,001 ways. And then if you bring OCD in the room, right? And if it touches any of those topics, I mean, I can already imagine the kind of, you know, tornado.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tornado. No, it definitely is. And I think that, you know, for me growing up Latinx and sort of internalizing all of these cultural values as well as societal values, you know, I was taught from very young that, hey, you're a female and this is how your life is going to be as a female. You are going to go to school. You're going to get a nice little job that lets you be at home with your kids, because you're definitely going to have like kids and, you know, a husband. And, you know, everything was set out in this very gendered kind of path for me. And there was never any room for me to express myself, which is already kind of difficult being first generation. And on top of that, I'd been having OCD symptoms for so long too, that I was holding on to these feelings of, okay, I actually don't feel like I fit into the definition of a female. And I think I might be attracted to women and men. And also, I think something's wrong with me, because I'm like 8, 9, 10 years old and I'm laying in bed all night, not sleeping, because I'm thinking about death. So there's like a lot of stuff wrong with me. And as a child, that's really heavy to hold on to. as I got older, a lot of my, you know, doubts from OCD kind of started creeping into my sexuality. And I remember college being the first time I could kind of try to express that. And of course, then being met with the stigmatizing comments of, you know, you're just a fence sitter, you're not bi, you're not non-binary. That's not a thing. You have to pick a side. And OCD latched onto that and was like, well, you're probably not. There's just something really wrong with you that you're thinking these ways. I didn't know it was OCD at the time, but it made expressing who I was and being my authentic self really, really difficult.
Yeah. As I'm listening to that, I guess the question I really have now that I want to ask is, because I'm going to assume, and I know it takes a lot of courage and strength and trust to be in that journey and really get to a place where you just start to claim it, like, look, this is who I am, this is what it is, right? And then to understand finally that all the stuff I'm dealing with this whole time is in fact OCD, which that in itself is just, it could be a big sense of relief, but also then of course it's like another set of things I gotta now figure out. But you know, if anybody's listening right now and kind of relating to this on any level with, you know, from their own culture and then their own perspective, like, I'm sure people would be wondering, right? Like, how did you get through that? How do you manage that? How do you, you know, when you're in that and, you know, it's, I'm sure brings up questions about, you know, am I going to be rejected by my family or, you know, am I going to be ousted? Am I, you know, like the whole, you know, for humans, belonging, safety, trust are kind of paramount in terms of our own development and growth, right? So really we're talking about that now something that comes in question. So how did you, yeah, go through that?
Huge ask. And I think, you know, it's important to sort of put out there, it didn't happen all at once. Like I didn't just, you know, find out I had OCD, go get treatment, and then come right out the gate swinging like, you know, this is who I am and screw everybody else. It was a process and it started with being diagnosed and getting the right treatment, you know, which I did ERP and I found it really helpful. And as I built a relationship with my therapist and trusted him and was encouraged to do things like go to support group, that's where I really started to feel not just less alone, but empowered to start talking about my experiences, because I'd carried all of that guilt and shame and stigma for so long. And I never had like a name for it. I just knew that it was a part of me. And as I got to express myself in group, I found, I feel a little bit better about showing who I am. And then I started to seek out advocacy. As I sought out advocacy, I found two people who I think were really influential in kind of coming out, who were Chris Tronson and Allegra Castens. I saw them being out and it really inspired me to take things a step further. And first I came out to my therapist, then I started coming out to my close friends and family. And, you know, it is really scary. I think being in therapy and also being in support group was a huge, huge advantage because I had that built-in support to where when I did get rejected sometimes or made fun of or questioned, I could lean back on my other support systems. Had I not had that, I might have just gone right back to where I was. So I think the way you do it is you find another support system. You find support outside of those family systems, as hard as that may feel. And, you know, sometimes as unfair as that feels, right? Like I shouldn't have to do that. My family should accept me. But if that's not the way it is, and I still want to, I value living authentically, then I have to find that support elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's huge, right? Because end of the day, we hit these crossroads where we have to make decisions, right? About who I am, and I can keep hiding and kind of let it keep swallowing me up, really. Or yeah, I take that just one step, like you said, right? And just focus on that one step and get that done. And absolutely, I don't think I don't know any humans who can do any of these things by themselves. That's just, I don't know. That's I don't know who. I know every person I ever talked to, no matter how strong or confident they may seem, but they have somebody or something, right? So, you know, whether it's finding literally, like, I know plenty of people who will go to like subreddits and, mm-hmm. you know, find a community that way, or they might Google and find like a peer group that way. You know, yeah. Some might find, you know, at least one friend or one person that they can actually talk to and be honest about, but somebody, something, somewhere, so that, yeah, you're creating for yourself, right, that safety. And like you said, you do have to get through that point of understanding, like, yeah, I shouldn't have to, but yet here it is, right?
It's really hard. I think that's one of the hardest parts. And I think that's at the heart of acceptance, right, of anything, is that sometimes things in life are unfair. And we can choose to either kind of let that be a barrier, or we can let it kind of be what it is and move forward regardless in the ways that we're able to, right? We might not be able to remove that barrier, but we can work around it the best we can. And I think that's, you know, the case with my family. I mean, starting with my therapist was, to me, the most sort of plausible, like, safe thing to do. Yeah. And then slowly, you know, I found community online. That was really where I started, on Instagram. My Instagram page was really just a way for me to find folks who also had OCD. And from there, it just kind of snowballed.
I love it. That's actually really cool. Yeah. I mean, I that's actually one of the, I think, the advantages we do have in this modern days. We have technology that evolved in this way, right? That we can find some forums or communities or some places where we can start to connect. Yeah.
It was literally just me going, I wonder if there's other people out here, because I got a taste of it in support group. And I said, I want to talk to more people who are like me.
Yeah.
And from there, I started volunteering with the IOCDF. And the cool thing about finding community and finding a place that is safe for you, and finding places that are safe for you on multiple levels, is that you start building these really amazing relationships that fulfill different needs. And I know what happened for me is one day I looked back and I said, you know, life is still kind of unfair and I can't be out everywhere and not everyone accepts me or understands me. But also I have some really amazing humans in my life who do. And so they get to be kind of my chosen family. And I'm getting like emotional thinking about it, but it's true. These are folks that I can depend on and who I trust and who I would trust with my life. And so that's really special.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the piece of it, right? We have to, I mean, that's not we have to, but whether you want to or not, in life, you will be put in situations where, again, you're going to have to make decisions and start to really and continuously make changes of, okay, what's actually good for me and my mental health? And, you know, what do I need to let go, as much as it might hurt and I don't like it or I don't want to, but I have to, right? And because some things are not in our control. So as much as it might be unpleasant and uncomfortable and really hard, but like you said, to your point, right, it's the acceptance of what is. Right. But this is what it is. And so then let me look at where can I do something and what relationships can I bring into my life that will, yeah, love and embrace me totally as I am, so that I can build those other connections.
Yeah. And I want to acknowledge that it's not that easy for everyone, right? You may live in a place where you can't tell everyone you have OCD, or you may work at a place where you can't tell everyone you have OCD, or you may be in a space where coming out is unsafe. And that's okay. Not everyone's path has to be exactly the same in order to be valid. In an ideal world, everyone would be able to do all those things, because it has been shown, I think, in a lot of studies that, you know, our mental health is better when we're able to be authentic. But there are still ways that, you know, we can find support regardless of how out about anything we are. And so I would encourage everyone to look for those avenues.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I think, very much on point. Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I just want to say thank you so much for, you know, being open and vulnerable and, you know, having a real conversation. I mean, that's really what it's about, right? And that's what this show is really for. It's is to keep having different points of view, to for people to keep recognizing that they can find themselves in these episodes and hopefully get some courage and advice. So what would be one thing if you were going to leave folks with one kind of tip or one piece of hope, what would that be?
You ask like these huge questions. And I'm like, how do I answer that like succinctly? Gosh, I think from all my experience and kind of, you know, being out there in the community and talking to people on my Instagram, like in direct messages and questions and support groups, I think a lot of times what I hear folks of any ethnicity, gender orientation, sexual orientation, whatever it is, say is just, I feel like everyone else is worthy of recovery and that they're capable of it, but I'm not. And to that, I just want to say, you are. You're totally worthy of it. OCD, stigma, shame, all of these things work together. Sometimes societal expectations, they make us feel that we're not worthy for all these different reasons. And OCD latches onto it, onto all of those things and likes to tell us, yeah, you know, society's right. Your family's right. So-and-so at the, you know, dollar store, they're right. You're not worthy of recovery. You're crazy. You're messed up. That's not true. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. There's no reason to be ashamed, even though it may feel like it right now. You're totally worthy of receiving treatment and living a really beautiful, fulfilling life. And yeah, it may be hard sometimes, but it can also be really joyous.
I love that. That's beautiful. How can people find you if they'd like to find you?
I'm so easy to find. So you can find me on my Instagram. That's where I am most of the time, at Alexandra is Obsessed. I am also on TikTok, although I'm not on there anywhere near as much, on the same handle, Alexandra is Obsessed. And I can also be found at the IOCDF. So if you can't find me anywhere else, you can always reach out and they'll find me.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Christina.
Thanks for joining us on the OCD Whisperer podcast. Remember, your path to freedom from OCD, it's a journey. Visit www.onlineocdacademy.com for self-help masterclasses that fit your journey, your pace, and your budget. We understand that not everybody can afford a specialist, and that's why we're here to provide accessible resources. Subscribe, rate, and share. And together, we can overcome the challenges of OCD. Stay strong, and we'll catch you on the next episode.